always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome into the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. It is Monday, May the 6th already, 4:06 in the p.m. Central Daylight Time. Tim Jones back in the studio along with Chris Arps and producer Joey V. Great to be back in the saddle. And Chris, with the world on fire under Joe Biden, which it seems to get worse every week, how great is it that we have Jim Tallon on this afternoon as Israel is reported to have begun striking Rafah, the last Hamas stronghold?
Wow, and I thought also I saw that Hamas had accepted a ceasefire deal that
it came
through the wire, and I think they were trying to probably head off this invasion, Tim, by accepting this ceasefire at 11:59. But apparently, from what we're watching there on Fox Business News, Israel said you waited too late. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, before we get into the show here,
yes, sir.
You look very pink, tannish.
Yes,
Mr. Jones, you want to tell us where you've been the last couple of days?
I've been in the land of freedom and liberty, Chris, and I was working on electoral integrity with a lot of our friends in that nationwide electoral world.
Yeah.
Hanging out all weekend with some folks from Heritage. Got to hang out with Zach Smith.
Zach.
He says hello to you.
Yes. Like
and
Zach.
He's looking forward to, I know we can't talk about too many details yet. Let me just say, Zach Smith is looking forward to potentially hanging out with Chris and I and all of you later this year. So a little tease for later. Hans von Spakovsky was there.
Ah, Hans von.
And got to meet his wife as well. I met her, Ms. von Spakovsky.
What do I call her? Don't you ever say that twice in like 2 minutes.
Do I call her the Countess?
The Countess, yes. Baroness.
So the Baroness. I like that. The Baroness. She was there. A lot of folks, Chris, from the Republican National Lawyers Association. A lot
of Michael Thielen and his new bride, Ashley Varner.
I saw Michael and Ashley.
Yes.
They said to say hello to you as well.
Excellent.
Carrie Telesco from the National Election Integrity Network was there.
Okay.
She said to say hi to you and Becky, because she works with Becky on citizen-only voting. So this was the world of folks protecting electoral integrity. We had meetings all morning long, and then we might have played a little golf in the afternoons. So
tell the folks, Tim, that 2020 is not going to happen again, and you are making sure, along with ACV and other election integrity groups, to make sure we don't see a repeat of 2020, right?
At least in most of the red states. Yeah, Chris. I will, and you know, Chris, in all seriousness, I will say that folks like Kerry and Becky Arps and yourself and me and others, people like us, to quote Hillary Clinton, it takes a village. There have been people toiling away in the trenches behind the scenes, working with legislators and policymakers and think tanks for the last, 4 years, nearly 4 years, to try to fix at least some of the problems we saw. And Chris, in a lot of states, I think in about 22 states, they have passed some major electoral integrity bills, whether it is paper ballots only, whether it's making sure that only citizens vote, passing voter ID laws. I would say that in nearly half the country, it has become easier to vote, but harder to cheat. And in other parts of the country, they just want it to be, you know, vote whenever you want, however you want, and whenever you want. Oh, also, Chris, I was with the fellow that we interviewed a few weeks ago who wrote the Arabella book, Scott Walter.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Scott Walter was there, and he gave his money speech about how much money the left has that he talked to our listeners about. It was a great conference. It's great to see so many people working so hard. However, it's also terrifying to know that the left has billions of dollars of Zucker bucks and Soros bucks to spend against our efforts.
And thank God, along with some of these election integrity efforts that Tim and I have been working on through these coalitions, they have outlawed Zucker bucks in a lot of these different jurisdictions. Not all, but a lot of them. One of the groups we work with, I'm terrible at names, but I'll always remember your face. She currently is the Arizona GOP chairman. She was just elected to that about a couple of months ago. And her group, they are working in states and cleaning out their dead voter files,
mm-hmm.
going person by person and doing what the election board should be doing. They are doing that and cleaning those rolls out. And so there are a lot of people that have said 2020, a lot of groups have said 2020 shenanigans will not happen again. We are on it.
And there are so many states that are conducting those efforts. We heard a lot of great things going on in states like Utah, in states like Arizona. Texas is leading the charge. There is an awesome state senator that said he'd love to come on our show. Chris, this guy looks like he stepped right out of a country western novel.
All right.
He talks the walk. He walks the walk.
He's out of a Yellowstone episode?
I think so, yes. and he has been fighting the good fight. And then, Chris, I met a fellow that I honestly didn't know he existed until I met him, because we don't know every statewide elected official in every state. The Secretary of State of the great state of Indiana is Diego Morales.
Okay.
And he did a presentation. He got up on the stage and he said, and I'm not making fun of his accent, because he was very self-deprecating. He's Hispanic American. He served in the military. He's incredibly proud to be an American. He became a naturalized citizen when he joined the military, and now he is a full-blooded American. And he said, we need more people in the Republican Party that look like me and sound like me.
Exactly.
And he said, I am fighting every day. He goes, I am a Hispanic American that believes in electoral integrity. And he told us all the bills that he has helped push in Indiana to make that so. And he said, Hispanic Americans who come here legally, they're sick and tired of illegal immigration and people that cheat and break the system.
Speaking of Hispanics, and we talked about this this morning on the Mike Ferguson show. I had an honor to guest host his show today.
I listened to you.
Listen to this, Tim. Biden, did you hear where we talked about how Biden campaign is launching a new campaign aimed at getting Latino men motivated to vote based on abortion rights?
No way.
Yes.
I didn't hear that part.
A television, radio, and digital advertisement during airing in both English and Spanish in competitive, quote, battleground states feature Cesar Carrion, a U.S. Marine Corps veteran who now works as a Las Vegas carpenter, mentioning his daughters and attacking Trump as, quote, not tough for taking away women's, quote, unquote, freedom. So this is traditionally Hispanics who are Catholic, strong family values. They have a lot of kids, trying to tell them, hey, Hispanic men, you need to be voting on abortion and killing babies. Tim, we're not Democrats or anything. That's not our forte, of course. But, what do you think of that strategy? As a Catholic, do you think that works, going to Catholic, strong, traditional Catholic men and telling them to vote for abortion?
Not those who are true to their faith or their belief system. Yeah, Chris, I look, the left is never good about, the left is never good when they're directly honest with people, because that sounds like a direct honest attack, but they're being honest about where they are. They always try to do it in a very circuitous, clever way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they go right at people and say, yep, we're pro-abortion and you should be as well, I think traditional Hispanic American voters are going to recoil from that. I think they're going to reject that argument. I hope they do. You know what? I don't even know if I have to hope. They've rejected it in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Florida has an extremely high Latin American, Hispanic American population, and Florida has become redder as it's become more conservative. I don't think that's a coincidence. Florida has pushed back on all these crazy socialist leftist policies, mm-hmm. of the left, and they've become a redder state.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to work.
And what has helped Florida become a more redder state is they've had an influx the last 10 or 15 years or so of people from Venezuela, and Venezuelans who come from a despotic regime who don't have freedom come to the United States and enjoy that. And they have kind of become the new Cubans. Tim, that, you know, Cubans traditionally are conservative. They are Republicans. Venezuelans have been the same way. They are on the western side of Florida. I think that's Tampa area, mm-hmm. and near the Panhandle. Also, a lot of them have settled in that part of Florida, and it's helped make Florida even more red.
Cuban Americans are incredibly conservative, hardworking capitalists. Are. I hung out with a huge crew of Cubans when I was at Fordham University. A bunch of them were there from Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So Puerto Rico has a heavy Cuban population as well. And the folks that I met from Cuba told me, I didn't know much about the political philosophy of Cubans back when I was 21, 22 years old. Sure. And I was educated on that. And you're right. They are extremely conservative folks.
And hard working. They are some hard working people and very entrepreneurial.
Suzanne knows this. I dated a Cuban in college. and Suzanne always jokes me. She says, "Well, you let that one get away." Yeah. This young lady.
All right, what was her name?
This young lady. Hang on a second. Glendis.
Oh, sorry, Suzanne.
Glendis Villar.
All right. Yeah. Look at you. He even rolled the tongue on that one.
Yeah. Glendis's father owned the Cartier boutique in Old San Juan in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Suzanne always says, "Well, you let that one get away."
He loved the tourists, I'm sure.
Yes, he did.
The wealthy tourists.
Yes. Chris, we could talk about all those issues and more with Susie Moore at 525. I'm sorry?
We're going to talk about wealthy tourists with Susie Moore?
No, the crazy abortionists who are going after the Hispanic population. And, Chris, the campus protests that raged all through the weekend. I'm going to do a speaker stump speech on this topic at 5:07. You've got the Chris's Corner opportunity at 4:45.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the latest polling that has come out for 2024. Some look sort of upbeat for Biden, but it's still, for most of the polls, the pretty bad news for President Biden. That's going to be Chris's Corner at 4:45.
Chris's Corner at 4:45 at 5:07, the speaker's stump speech. I've got all the details and the receipts on who is funding these pro-Hamas Palestinian protests. None of you are going to be surprised. It has something to do with 1600 Pennsylvania.
And here's a shocker too, Tim. When I saw that list, is there are a couple of Jewish names that are on that list. And it's like, why in the world would a Jewish person support anti-Israel campus protest?
We should ask Bernie Sanders that too. Bernie Sanders is a Jewish American and he's on the wrong side of this equation too.
You know, Bernie said on Face the Nation yesterday that he predicts that this Hamas-Israel war may be Joe Biden's Vietnam. That's his exact words.
Whoa.
They were talking about Chicago in 68 and all of the campus unrest. There are a lot of similarities there. And he said that on Face the Nation, this could be Biden's Vietnam. So doesn't sound very optimistic.
The folks at Red State have been covering that wall to wall. And so we'll talk to Susie about those issues at 5:25 and more. So there you go, folks. Senator Jim Talent at 4:25 about all the unrest around the globe. Chris's Corner on the latest and greatest polling at 4:45 regarding the presidential race on down. At 5:07, who's funding all of these Patagonia pup tents on college campuses? At 5:25, Susie Moore of Red State following all of those issues and so much more. And producer Joey V is in studio as well with his Adidas wear.
How you doing? Friday.
Got the tracksuit on today.
I was on my way home Friday. I got caught in that Free Palestine traffic at the WashU protest.
Really?
It took me forever to get home. I don't know if you heard, but they were walking up and down Skinker and McCausland and shut down Highway 40.
Were they saying no justice, no peace?
I think they were saying free Palestine, actually. So everyone was just losing their minds out there. Cars were getting into wrecks. It was chaos. And so luckily I live around there. I got off on a side street and made my way home. But there were a lot of unhappy people not supporting the cause that day.
I have a really quick movie question for you. I've been dying to ask you since yesterday. I was channel surfing on the plane on the way home, trying to find something to watch for the last hour of the flight or so. And I stumbled across a movie, Joey, that I think is rarely recent, but it talks about something that happened 20 years ago. Have you seen or heard or watched 12 Strong featuring Chris Hemsworth?
I have not. Is that... I can't remember that.
My wife probably has. She loves him. She's got a crush on him.
Well, she will love this movie because Chris, he walks around like a big old badass all movie, okay? So it's all about the first, it's based on a true story. It's all about the first Green Beret team that gets parachuted behind enemy lines in Afghanistan to fight the Taliban after 9/11, right after 9/11. And Chris, it's weird, you know? You and I think probably have a hard time realizing that's over 20 years ago now. So when I found that movie, and it's a decent movie, it gets okay reviews, but it brought back chills because it takes you back to the movie starts with the news reports from that day, yeah. and then it immediately yeah. goes to the Green Berets and their families as they're leaving. Mm-hmm. They're leaving their families, mm-hmm. and they're going to go into Afghanistan. They're going to be 12 guys yeah. dropped behind enemy lines to hook up with all of these Afghan freedom fighters, all of whom hate, all the tribal lords hate yeah. each other, but they're supposed to go kill the Taliban general.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because I remember back then, I'm wondering, were these the Green Beret or the SEALs? That the people that were on the horseback, were they on horseback? Or
sometimes.
Was that the other group? Because I know I've seen yeah, pictures of that.
These are the Green Berets.
Okay.
And they were on, I only got through half the movie. They were on horseback for some of the scenes. Okay. And so, Chris, they were there. And we can ask Jim Talent about this too, because he'll remember. They were dropped behind enemy lines near Mozar al-Sharif and like 30 miles south. And they were supposed to hook up with all the different tribal warlords of the Northern Alliance.
Mm, I remember
which
well,
was
that's a name from the past.
Yeah, which was a very loosely affiliated Northern Alliance, Chris. So like all these warlords, they all hate the Taliban, yeah. but they all don't like each yeah. other either. Yep. So it's kind of like the enemy of my enemy.
My enemy is my friend, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And man, Chris, I'll tell you what, the cinematography of the landscape
I can imagine.
And the dirt and the grit and the grime and the conditions in Afghanistan, when you see all this, you're like, no wonder nobody's been able to yeah. conquer this place because yeah. it's so mountainous and craggy and it looks like the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And everybody's buried down in the bunkers.
Yeah. Was it filmed a lot of times in action military films like that? They'll enjoy knows more of this than I do, where they'll film it where it seems like there's almost barely color in the movie to give it that gritty, more real life. Is it filmed
yes.
like that?
Not. Yes, it's got a lot of those earth tones.
Yeah.
And what do they call that, Joey? Isn't there a name for that?
Probably sepia. It looks like it was filmed in New Mexico.
Yeah, okay. Mm. New Mexico, yeah. Mm. Sepia. Yeah, that sepia tone.
Yeah.
Everything's very...
There's color, but it's almost
yeah.
but it's almost kind of like black and white,
it's
too.
Gritty.
And it really makes it look gritty and
yeah.
makes it you feel like you are there.
So,
more.
Becky Arps, there's a movie for
yes.
you. Chris Hemsworth.
She's probably seen it.
Starring Chris Hemsworth.
She might have snuck one night, couldn't sleep, and went and watched it. She is a real big fan of his.
And there's
I'm
a few
a
other
jealous.
There's a few other major characters in it. I can't remember the actors' names, but there's a few other guys I'm like, oh, you know who's in there? You know who's like his right-hand man? The guy who played Lex Luthor in one of the Superman movies, the
Michael
guy,
Shannon,
he's got mm-hmm. that gaze. And at
okay.
one point, one of the warlord leaders goes, "So Hemsworth has never been in battle mm-hmm. before, but the other guys have. But they want Hemsworth to lead him. They think he's a great leader. So they turn to
Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon, and the warlord goes." He's got killer eyes.
Mm.
You don't have killer eyes yet. He's got killer eyes. And Michael Shannon has killer mm. eyes. He's the dark-haired guy with a real piercing stare. He played Lex Luthor.
Well, I'm yeah. glad it's not the other actor. I can't think of his name right now, but Joey, he was the warlord in the Game of Thrones, the Dothraki. He's very famous. Now, Aquaman. Who's Aquaman?
Big dude.
Jason Momoa.
There you go.
That's my wife's
yes.
other favorite Hulk actor.
Oh,
so
Hulk
if you would have so
yeah.
said him, too, I'm like, oh, I can't win. Both these actors she loves, and you're recommending these movies.
Well, yes, and as we're talking about all these military movies, I was just checking, and I'm sure that one of our favorite vets in the region, I'm sure Scotty's listening right now, so I bet he has a lot of stories about that time, and I want to thank him for his service once
again.
Yes,
most definitely.
So.
Hey, anyway, before we get out of here, Tim, I want to wish all of our Jewish friends today Yash HaShoah, which is Holocaust Remembrance Day, and Representative Adam Swadron, who is Jewish, he brought that up today when I had him on the show, so mm-hmm. I don't want to say happy because it's not a happy day, but this is Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day. That's wishing that to all of our Jewish friends.
And Chris, to segue on that, I was just checking our Facebook feed. One of our favorite Jewish American listeners, Tanya, she chimed in on our last conversation mm-hmm. about the Jews who
yeah.
were part of the funding.
Yeah.
She said, fellas, unfortunately, we have capos, as
I know that's the word.
As Vic would call them.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Soros, Sanders, Zuckerberg. She says even Hitler's had Jews working for him.
Yeah.
We call them JINOs, Jews in name only. She said they're so vile. My own family are the would-be capos, as I call them, the sad truth. So, yeah, Tanya, unfortunately, everybody has traitors in their midst.
Exactly. Thank mm-hmm. you, Tanya, for that input.
Thank you to everybody who's checking us out today on Facebook, on Rumble, on Twitter, on Instagram, newstalkstl.com, listening to us on the smart speakers. Millions of ways to listen to the number one station in the region for live and local conservative talk. Chris, let's get to a break so we can bring in Jim Talent
yes,
to talk about all these international all these international problems near and far. Senator Jim Talent joins us next on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The huge crowd of pro-Palestine protesters first marched from Forest Park down Skinker to Forest Park Parkway every step of the way. They immediately shut down the intersection, huddled in a circle, and stopped dozens of drivers. Several frustrated drivers made U-turns and quickly crossed over the median to get out of the traffic jam. One man actually drove through the crowd. Demonstrators rushed to stop him. When he got out of his car, a fight broke out. The guy hopped back into his car and then drove to the opposite side where police stopped him. Protesters then kept marching down Skinker, making their way to I-64 and shutting down the east and westbound ramps at Skinker.
4:32 on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, and that is a report on the protest last Friday at Washington University. Our next guest is a proud graduate of that university. We'll talk about that and other issues. Former U.S. Senator Jim Talent and chairman of the Reagan Institute.
I'm watching this and just wondering, you know, who's running the show.
This Jim Talent segment is brought to you by Royal Banks of Missouri.
Senator, welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. I know you are a man of peace and you don't condone violence, but when it comes to the issue, what do you think of this?
Well, if I were a prosecutor and, the public may be very glad that I'm not, because I don't think I would do a good job at it. I would be disinclined to prosecute somebody who used the minimal amount of force necessary to clear a public road from one of these ridiculous protesters. Mm-hmm. Let me put it that way to you. I really would be disinclined. I don't think... is anybody else getting really sick of this?
Day one.
I'm glad I'm not on a highway backed up because of these people. I'm really very glad.
You know, our producer Joey has a story. He got caught in that traffic. Joey, tell us how long you were in traffic.
I was in traffic. It's normally a 20-minute drive. I was in traffic for about an hour trying to get home on Highway 40, and it was maddening enough to make me switch to Waze. Google Maps did me dirty, and I think Waze lets you comment what's going on, and you can get the top secret information from the people from, you know, way up front. So I'm a Waze man now.
That's what I use in travel.
Yeah, absolutely, indeedy. Well, Senator, all of this is about the fact that these kids on these college campuses haven't apparently cracked a history book much in the last few years and are largely being played by these professional leftist activists who are using the opportunity of the Israeli-Hamas war to stir up all kinds of chaos and confusion and instability here in our country. Senator, today Israel launched targeted strikes against Hamas in Rafah. Official calls the reported ceasefire deal a deception. What are your thoughts on all this? Can you explain to our listeners where we are in this conflict?
Yeah, well, I'm glad they've started the action against Rafah. I doubt this is the main thing, though. I think they still have to move more civilians out of Rafah, and the quote unquote acceptance of a ceasefire by Hamas is a deception. They were given what even Tony Blinken called an extraordinarily generous offer about a week ago, which they rejected. I believe that one, under that one, they would have released 33 hostages in return for like 1,000 of cutthroat prisoners that the Israelis are keeping, and a 6-week ceasefire, and they rejected that. The point of this this counteroffer they're making, which is a nice way of describing it, is that Israel will reject it, and then they're hoping that that will convince the Biden administration to increase pressure on Israel not to go into Rafah. That's perfectly obvious. As I've said before, the only way they can win is if they can get the United States and other countries to pressure the Israelis into stopping. Well, the Israelis are not going to stop. Mm-hmm. And I think Hamas may be deluding themselves and believing that they are. They're going into Rafah, and I hope they get the whole crew. I hope they've been trapped there and haven't been able to escape, and they get them all and destroy the tunnels. And that would be very much in the interest of the United States if and when they do.
Speaking with Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator and chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. Senator, a startling report has surfaced that the United States held back a shipment of arms to Israel last week. Many are believing this was done to maybe to stop this offensive into Gaza. Your thoughts overall on that?
Yeah, I heard about that, too. I read about that, and they haven't explained it. I'm assuming that somebody in the Biden administration is trying to enforce the president's red line, that they couldn't invade Rafah. Although I'm not sure that's his red line, because the White House walked that back as soon as he said it. But as I said before, Israel's going in, and they have to go in. And we've talked about this a lot of times. This is an existential struggle for Israel, in the literal sense of the term. They have to restore deterrence, or they're going to keep getting attacked. And the question is if and when they're going to go after Iran, which is the head of the snake. Eventually, somebody's going to have to, because Iran wants to dominate the region, they want to destroy Israel, and they want to overthrow the Sunni Arab regimes and impose their own version of Sharia law. And if people don't understand that that is a threat to American security and a tremendous threat to our vital interests in the region, then, you know, I just give up. I mean, Iran is the threat. Hamas is one of the proxies. Hezbollah is a proxy. Houthis a proxy. Islamic Jihad is a proxy. They're all funded and armed and trained and largely directed by Iran.
Mm-hmm. And Senator, unfortunately, a big chunk of the global community is not on the right side of this battle either, are they? We today saw some headlines on many of the major wires whereby a UN agency was accused of being part of Hamas after Israel struck a terrorist headquarter. The IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, say a strike on a Hamas control center was located in a UN-related compound. Senator, there's a lot of people, unfortunately, that are part of the UN who are part of this kind of globalist bent who, for whatever reason, have decided to continue to make Israel the scapegoat of the world, right?
Yep. And I'm beginning to suspect there may be a little anti-Semitism.
Maybe just a hair.
Just a little bit. Not much.
Yeah. Israel is subjected to standards that nobody would think of applying to anybody else.
Mm.
Like, you can't conduct a war where the enemy is deliberately hiding out among civilians. And if you kill a civilian in the context of getting the enemy, then you are the aggressor. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And this is why they formed the Jewish state, because they knew that they couldn't trust any other country in the world to allow them to live in peace. And that really is what was behind the Zionist movement. It wasn't really a religious movement. It was, after centuries and centuries of persecution, they thought, well, maybe if we get our own state, we can live in peace. Well, they can't. But now they have a state and they can defend themselves, and they're doing it.
Senator, as a former member of the U.S. Senate, I want to play you something, and I want to get your thoughts on this suggestion from Arizona Senator Mark Kelly.
Would you support getting rid of the filibuster in order to support abortion rights, to codify Roe v. Wade into law?
Yes.
You would?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, and I, you know, when we were looking at voting rights legislation, I voted for that as well. I spent 15 years at NASA flying the space shuttle. If NASA had the rules of the United States Senate, the rocket ship would never leave the launch pad. So at times, at the appropriate time, I think this is one of them, I would consider, you know, changing those rules to make sure that women can get the health care they need.
Senator, I think I know where you stand on this, but talk about how dangerous this is, this suggestion.
Well, what's dangerous about it is to want to get rid of it for some particular piece of legislation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the filibuster. And we can have a long conversation about that. The Senate's basically not a majoritarian body anymore, and that all has all kinds of consequences, many if not most of them negative for the country. But the fact that he wants to get rid of it for a particular piece of legislation shows, well, let me put it this way. In the context of that interview, I understand what he said, But of course, I wonder if he'll say the same thing next year if the Republicans get control of the Senate. I imagine their tune will change about the value of the filibuster. And that's the problem, is that support or opposition to it among sitting senators has often devolved into, do we think it'll help us pass what we want to pass or defeat what we want to defeat? And it's pretty obvious that's where he's coming from here.
Yeah, Senator, wouldn't it be nice if we could ever get back to that point where people decide there are one or two things that the Senate and the House should work together on to advance the interests, advance America's interests, right? Securing the border, giving aid to our allies like Israel, who have, you know, received aid from us forever and a day. It seems like everything has to be polarized and politicized now in D.C., doesn't it?
Yeah, almost everything. They've worked together pretty well on a very big issue, which is how to respond to the threat from China. So I give them credit for that. The filibuster, as it's currently constituted, worked for a long time because most senators said, well, you know, just because I'm opposed to something doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to filibuster. Even when I was there, that attitude had still survived among a lot of people. I would not, for example, have voted to filibuster a judicial nominee that I opposed. Now, today, if it's not in place anymore, it was eliminated because they were doing it. The Democrats were doing it at the time to Court of Appeals nominees. And, you know, if you're going to have a norm, it has to be normal. It has to be applied by both sides. What they ought to do, Tim, is they should have earlier in the Congress had a group of four or five of them, people with, from both sides of the aisle that everybody respected, get together and talk about, okay, what should the filibuster look like in the next Congress and the Congress after that, when we don't know who's going to be in control of it? How do we want to limit it, if we indeed do want to limit it? Where do we want it to be allowed? For example, I could see it in circumstances where there's legislation to change the structure of government, like, for example, to pack the Supreme Court. And say, okay, you know, we're going to keep the filibuster for that, because those are constitutional small C changes, if you will. But I would be very interested in a genuine bipartisan effort to reform the filibuster along those lines. That's not what he's talking about.
Speaking with Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator and chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. Senator, the Russian Defense Federation has announced a simulated nuclear weapons drill, and last week they vetoed a U.N. resolution calling on nations not to place nuclear weapons in space. What is Putin doing?
Rattling sabers, because he knows it frightens people in the Biden administration. They're not going to use tactical nukes in Ukraine. It's basically, it's trench warfare there. It's World War One with drones. And they're not going to irradiate the battlefield. They kill a lot of their own people if they do. And as far as nukes in space go, yeah, it's a threat. I'm more concerned with the conventional threats from China. And if I want to get concerned about nukes, I get concerned about how the Chinese are doubling and tripling their nuclear arsenal. We really don't know how many warheads they're building. We do know that as of when the China Commission did a report on it 3 years ago, I was on the China Commission at the time, that they'd added 120 new silos. And, you know, it's not one silo, one warhead per silo either. So, yeah, I'm more concerned about the Chinese than I am about the Russians. But this is one of the reasons President Trump began the space service. In other words, he created his administration created a whole separate service for our space command and our space forces, because we have to modernize, we have to harden our space architecture, and we probably have to disperse it. I don't know how much progress they made in the last couple of years, but maybe we can pick up on that again next year.
Or maybe next week. We've been speaking with Senator Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator and chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. You can catch him on X at x.com/Jim Talent. Senator, thank you as always for joining us. Have a great week. Look forward to speaking with you next Monday.
Same to you guys. And that was a great close, Chris.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Chris's Corner, 447. We'll call it when we come back. We'll talk some Biden news, polling, a little gossip news in the New York Times about Joe Biden and some direct quotes. We've got it all here on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Senator, will you commit to accepting the election results of 2024? Bottom line.
At the end of the day, the 47th president of the United States will be President Donald Trump, and I'm excited to give back to low inflation, low unemployment.
Wait, Senator, yes or no? Yes or no? Will you accept the election results of 2024 no matter who wins?
That is my statement.
But is it just yes or no? Will you accept the election results of 2024?
I look forward to President Trump being the 47th president.
452 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. That is Kristen Welker. She is interviewing Senator Tim Scott, who is a potential vice president nominee. She was talking about the big shindig that was down at Mar-a-Lago. I think Tim went to that after he was done with his stuff down in Florida, down there hanging out at the private club. But, you know, I get so sick of, first of all, you know, I may take up Chris's Corner just on this here. Kristen Welker, the African-American woman that has taken over the duties of Meet the Press, I can't stand her.
I can't either.
And one of the reasons why I can't stand her is she's trying to be a Tim Russert wannabe. Mm-hmm. You remember Tim Russert was very famous. They did Saturday Night Live skits on it where he would ask you, are you running for president? You'd say no. And he would ask you 17 different ways to get the answer out of you. We understood, hey, that's Tim Russert. It's annoying probably, but it's funny seeing the politicians scramble. She has taken that on. If you watch Meet the Press regularly, she is always trying to be a Tim Russert type, trying to get people to say what she wants to say. And the one thing too that I hate now, because I watch all of these Sunday shows, and there has been a change since Donald Trump has become president. They have delegated themselves as the fact checkers of Republican candidates.
Right. Instead of reporting the news,
a Republican candidate or a politician will give an answer on something, and right after he gives the answer, if it's incorrect in their mind, they will correct them immediately right there. You've never saw anything like that before Donald Trump was president. They may, in a respectful way, maybe clarify what you're saying or something, but it's straight up fact checking. You see it over and over and over. But when there's Democrats that are being interviewed by these people, Tim, they don't fact check every single answer after the person gives it. And I want to ask, is that journalism? True journalism as a television reporter to do that?
No, it's not. And here, before anybody thinks we're being homers or we're being partisans, I can't stand it, Chris, when Hannity does it. Hannity does the same thing.
Yeah.
I want a journalist or even a commentator, even if you're a partisan commentator, mm-hmm. I want you to ask a question. I want to hear what the interviewee, I want to hear what they have. I don't care what, I know your position, right? I want to hear what they have to say.
If they say something that is blatantly out in left field or dishonest, then it's like, question them on it. But they're questioning them on stuff where, well, I have a different interpretation.
Arguable. Yeah.
You know, that's not my interpretation of what the issue. And because of that, I'm going to fact check you on the air of that because it doesn't align with what I'm saying or what I believe is correct. And I'm really sick to death of the media doing that. I really am. I mean, Kristen Welker is the worst.
Yes.
At it.
You know, a Republican will say the border is wide open and it's being invaded. And then they want to argue like nuance. Yeah. With them, and they're like, wait a minute, have you seen the pictures on television?
Yeah.
Yes, the border is wide open, and in fact, Mayorkas admitted that in a hearing a couple weeks ago where he said, yes, we have a border problem.
That annoys the heck out of me. I tell you who else is bad at that also is Margaret Brennan of CBS Face the Nation.
She's horrible.
She has delegated herself as being the fact checker when guests come on the TV. Look, you can't just let somebody come on your air on your show and just spot out straight lies and nonsense. I get that. Mm-hmm. And there has to be some measure of gatekeeping or checking what they're saying. But it's excessive. to me. And it's not like these are obvious things that are wrong. It's interpretation things that we don't see it that way. And that's necessarily, it's wrong. And I hate it. I hate that.
I do too.
Speaking of speech 507, Tim, what are we talking about? Because I just blew through mine.
That's all right. You did a great job.
I had to get that Kristen Welker stuff off my chest because that's been bothering me for ever since she has taken over. Mm-hmm. That has bothering me.
Mm-hmm. That was an excellent Chris's Corner. Whether we had the music or not, it doesn't matter. That's exactly what it was. And it was from the heart. And I agree with it. Chris, I'm going to talk about who is really funding. I'm going to expose who's, I know you've seen this list as well. There is a list out there, folks. It was published, I believe, in Politico, of all places, so this was not Fox News. Who's really funding the jihad in the United States of America? You might be surprised.
Hey, that's right. And Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.